The Blackshaw Arts Hour on Wandsworth Radio, where you listen with your ears and not your mouth.
Welcome to the Blackshaw Arts Hour. This evening I have with me Matt Boothman.
Good evening.
Vicky Weston.
Hello there.
Richard Stratton.
Hello.
And Alex Pankhurst.
Good evening. And
sorry, Alex, I cut you off there. That was very rude of me.
Don't worry about it.
On this episode of the show, we have got the boys back. If you were listening last week, then we did the first ever arts... Stratton Alex do art?
Yeah, that is the title.
Doesn't roll off the tongue very well, does it?
I don't know. If you say it right, it does.
That's our favourite way to name things. It doesn't really make any... Or it does make sense, but it's not easy to say.
Not easy to say.
So, Stratton Alex do art?
Yeah, it describes precisely who we are and what we do.
It's very much like a well-known brand of DIY supplies.
Mm.
Does what it says on the tin.
Brilliant. So we're doing that this show. We're also going to be hearing a review from Matt very soon, and Vicky's going to be doing an arts thing. She hasn't done an arts thing for a while.
I don't know. It's very exciting to be back.
Yes. You went and saw something strange on Friday, I feel.
Saw is not the right word for what me and Alex did on Friday.
Phrasing.
Yeah.
It's going to be interesting. But the first thing we're going to do is try and gauge what is going to happen with Strat and Alex do art for this hour. So, just to remind you...
We set a good benchmark. We set the bar high last episode, I think.
We really did. I mean, you guys did a really good job.
They genuinely did an art.
Yeah. And I feel like we worked to the constraints that we have,
mm-hmm.
which is that...
Stratton Alex.
The constraints that are Stratton Alex do a thing, and they do that thing in 1 hour.
Yeah.
Who wants to tell me what you're doing tonight?
I will tell. Tonight we have decided to do in an hour on a small dining room table sculpture. We have Gedio clay, natural clay. Is that, do you reckon you pronounce that, or that's an icon? I don't know. It's from the London Graphic Centre. Their prices seem to be reasonable.
Other places to buy clay are available.
Yeah. From PBO.com. From PBO.com. It looks good clay. It's grey. We've got 1.5 kilograms of it. I imagine that's enough to do 2 sculptures.
Small sculptures.
Small sculptures. Hardens without cracking, without firing, in 4 to 5 days. So that's great. So what we actually made today will be preserved.
Long lasting.
Yeah.
That's exciting.
What are you going to do with said clay?
So, make a mess first and foremost. our intent is the brief that we have been given, that we discussed long and hard in the 2 minutes before we started recording, we have got to pretend we are creating something that will go on the fourth plinth in Trafalgar Square, and something of the current climate.
Something that could go on the fourth plinth tomorrow.
Something that's going to really hit home. It's going to resonate with people. People are going to understand as worthy of the spot on the plinth.
There's a perfect irony here about the fact that it's going to be very small. So I think we'll imagine that whatever they create is like the prototype for what would end up on
the plinth. We scale it up.
Or will we? Maybe that's the point.
Maybe. You have to climb up there to see.
Maybe we'll make the plinth and say that art doesn't need to be big.
So much artistic license is going to happen tonight. When was the last time you guys used clay or did any kind of sculpture?
Primary school.
Okay.
I made a pig. I painted it black and white.
I made a hedgehog. So there's a hog theme here.
That's really weird because afterwards I made a hedgehog. I kid you not.
Should we just make hedgehogs?
I kind of want to now. My hedgehog was better than the pig.
That is not very culturally appropriate for at the moment, I don't think. Is there like a story with hedgehogs happening that we could appropriate that?
Oh, well, I thought you meant it's like inappropriate. I was like, what's wrong with hedgehogs?
Yeah.
What cultural boundary have I crossed inappropriately with a hedgehog? I mean, they're in the latest John Lewis advert.
Are they?
Well, that is
that's
art,
now.
So, you know.
Yes, it is.
If you can get one on a trampoline, then go for it.
Okay.
The idea is 1 hour, something of the now, something that's going to, you know, that speaks to the zeitgeist of the moment.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
If you decide that it should art speak to the zeitgeist, This is a decision you guys have to make.
This is what we'll be thinking about as we sculpt.
Yeah.
Too much thinking, not enough doing.
And if you follow us on Twitter at Blackshore Update, you can see photos of work in progress and maybe even some video.
Yeah, I'm going to try and do a stop motion thing on my phone, but it's propped up currently against a speaker, a bit of Tupperware, and a novelty can opener, and I can't see what it's pointing at. So there will either be a video or there'll be an apology that there is no video.
Okay, cool. Well, you guys should probably move over to your crafting claymaking station.
Yeah,
well,
right.
Get that clay out of its bag and begin.
Yeah, get cracking.
I suppose.
Yeah,
this is a competition. I would like to remind our listeners that this we will be choosing a winner. Out of this, as much to your guys' disdain.
Mm. So you get to choose what's on the fourth plinth.
Yeah,
one of us will be on the fourth plinth.
Yeah. And one of you will just be sad.
Okay.
Yeah.
Will one of you be making the fourth plinth for us? Or can we find something that we can just use?
We can find something to put it on. Amazing. And take a photo of it.
Make that happen.
Yeah.
Cool.
Okay,
good.
Guys. Go and make this happen. And the first thing that we always do, other than talk about what Strat and Alex are going to do as an art, is this thing.
The Matt Boothman Film Review. So good, I put my trousers back on.
So, Matt, what are you bringing us a review of this week?
Arrival, as promised.
Yes,
like,
you did promise.
It's rare enough that I know what I might review next and what's coming out. And it's even rarer that I say a thing that I might review next and I actually then do it and don't just change my mind.
This is an exciting day for all of us, it really is.
It is very exciting. We've got guys in the background making stuff out of clay. You might hear some squelching noises throughout this review. We apologise for that.
It is clay, we can confirm.
Yes,
yeah.
Definitely clay. So, Arrival.
Yeah. So this is a new movie by Denis Villeneuve, who did Sicario, which you might remember I reviewed many shows ago with Emily Blunt.
Yeah.
So this is it's a first contact movie. So aliens come to Earth, and what happens next? So
aliens like from space.
Aliens from space.
That is correct.
I'm afraid.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. Continue.
So they touch down in their giant mysterious ships at 12 apparently random points across the world. And they let people in once every 18 hours to sort of try to communicate with them. And so Amy Adams is Professor Louise Banks, who is a linguistics professor, who is called on by the military to come to the shell that's touched down in Montana, USA. The ship, they call them shells, to try to work out how to communicate with these aliens, find out what they want, why have they come to Earth, why did they land where they did, are they dangerous, what do they mean for us?
Okay.
And she's sort of teamed up with a physicist played by Jeremy Renner and the sort of the military colonel played by Forrest Whitaker.
Mm-hmm.
There's always a military colonel,
yeah.
And he's usually played by Forrest Whitaker.
Yeah.
It's just...
He's great.
Yeah, he's so good.
They're
so
all
good.
Like, even Jeremy Renner is good at this. Like, Amy Adams, great, we all knew that. Forrest Whitaker, very reliable. Jeremy Renner... little bit touch and go, but he's actually decent in this.
Okay.
So let's get the critical stuff out of the way first, because I straight up loved this movie and I hate that I have to say anything bad about it. Amy Adams is the only woman in it, so that's a thing.
Gosh,
yeah.
Darn
it.
Is,
yeah.
Oh,
so
collective
she's,
sigh from all the females
yeah.
in
the
I mean,
room.
She is the most important character,
she's
I
great.
Get the sense.
She's the protagonist, she's the main character, everything depends on her. She is an unapologetically, massively brainy woman. She's the smartest person in the room. She makes all the breakthroughs. But she's the exceptional woman because she's basically the only one in the movie.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So that is an issue, and it's one that you can't ignore. But there's so much about this movie that's great. So it's kind of a... There's a long tradition in sci-fi and sci-fi cinema of first contact movies. I've never seen one with quite this much focus on the language and the words. So it's science fiction, but the science that it's focusing on is linguistics and language, which kind of appeals to me as somebody who likes words.
Mm-hmm.
And it makes that point that the language has to come first. Understanding and communication has to come first in any sort of situation like this. So Jeremy Renner, the physicist character, his first instinct is, have you started throwing like number sequences at them? Have you done algebra? Have you given them a Fibonacci sequence and seen how they react?
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, no, no, take a back seat, Renner. She's got to do her work first, because until we've got some shared language in common, we can't know how they're reacting to you. Like, we can't know that they've understood your Fibonacci. We can't understand their response to it. Like, the language and the shared understanding and communication has got to come first.
Mm-hmm.
It builds and builds on that with the idea that that you might have come across that learning new languages rewires your brain in certain ways. It sort of changes the way that your nerves and your neural pathways work. And the idea that the language that you speak to some extent determines how you see and understand and relate to the world.
Yes.
So it's got lots of sort of really like science fictional ideas, but ones that like they're not sort of the hard physics and the maths and sort of cold equations sort of science.
Yeah, like overarching things that we can relate to.
Yeah. It's nice to see what are often called the soft sciences treated mm-hmm. with that same sort of science fictional lens that kind of extrapolates and says, what can we take from this and where might this go?
Yeah.
And so you've got all these characters who are sort of, they're in their military camp, going into this thing every 18 hours, very kind of isolated from the rest of the world. And so they're their only window on what's going on in the rest of the world, and the reaction, people's reactions to these arrivals is the news.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a kind of topical thing that because the only window they have on the world is the news, it seems like everything is going absolutely to hell,
mm-hmm.
and that it's all riots and all looting and all everything. And so you get a little bit of how the other people on the base who are kind of isolated and have only that as a way to see the rest of the world kind of respond.
Sure.
There's a kind of message to be had there. Science fiction makes up a lot of cinema these days. Like, the majority of movies are science fiction in some way, whether it's superheroes or space or sort of the a young adult dystopia sort of stuff like Maze Runner or Hunger Games, that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And this movie is kind of the sort of things that this movie is doing is the kind of stuff that makes me a science fiction fan, makes mm-hmm. me fall in love with science fiction, and makes me think that it's actually an important form of literature. The fact that there's a misconception that science fiction is always trying to predict the future, and that a science fiction story sort of somehow fails if what it depicts ends up not coming true.
Mm-hmm.
But what it can be at its best is it's not predicting the future, but it's showing kind of a suggestion of a way that things could be, and kind of an extrapolation.
And also how humans deal with how that change to the Earth could happen as well, I think, is really what science fiction should be doing.
Yeah.
From someone who is not an avid science fiction person, it's interesting to see human reaction to pretty weird situations.
Yeah, so sort of it's about the importance of avoiding miscommunications, and the importance of kind of working together. So all these different people around the different teams around like it focuses very much on Amy Adams's team,
mm-hmm.
as it should, but the there are these 11 other teams in these random touchdown locations around the world that they all have to kind of share their data with to try to work out. And it's about kind of what happens when the communications with those places break down, when
mm-hmm.
politics gets in the way. Like, if you go and see this film, you won't believe what I'm about to say now for sort of 90% of it, but it's about sharing and working together, and what we can achieve when we take a longer view, and about what we can do when we see life not as a non-zero sum game. So it's not a case of if we achieve this, then everybody else loses out. It's that if we work together in certain ways, then it can be a win-win-win-win-win, and everybody gets something out of it. There doesn't
mm-hmm.
have to be winners and losers all the time.
Okay.
This all sounds very abstract. There is the character work is great in it as well. The sort of appropriately for a movie that's about the importance of language and linguistics, the script is great. Like, there's not a wasted word in it. There's a lot of kind of use of silent scenes,
mm-hmm.
Action told through kind of movement, action, the way the scenes are framed. And just the way it's put together, kind of the way the way each scene fits together, the way the shots fit together, the way the sort of different storylines dovetail together. It's edited in a way that can seem quite... It reminded me of a movie called Upstream Colour, which nobody else saw, directed called Shane Carruth. It got a really limited release around here. But it's edited in a way that makes it seem very much like a free association, just like we're just riffing, and here's a scene, and here's a shot, and here's an image.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems like that until you realise that it's not, and
right.
until you realise that it's actually put together really carefully to create a really strong effect. And with another thing that makes it remind me of that movie of Upstream Colour is it's got a really strong orchestral score,
mm-hmm.
like one that that is really kind of it's a noticeable part of it, and that a lot of the time you think, but there's this idea that if you notice the score, then it's not working,
mm-hmm.
but it really helps to kind of swell and underscore all of the emotion of it.
Oh, wow.
I think there's actually a history of, I mean, I'm a massive science fiction fan myself as well, Matt, and
yeah.
as you know, and there's a history of great sci-fi movies having incredible orchestral scores that are noticeable, often because space, if you're in space, space is silent, so you have to find, and like in 2001
yeah.
is a classic example, right, of way that they use Zarathustra to, you know, like, and that is the most noticeable part of those scenes, but it's so powerful for that reason.
And sort of the way I've described it, I realise sounds like it's quite kind of potentially kind of dry and theoretical, which is kind of deliberate because I don't want to talk too much about the characters' journeys, and specifically Amy Adams' character and how she develops over the film, because I really don't want to spoil it for anyone.
Mm-hmm.
Because there is an element of it's not a twist, it's something that you get to a certain point in the movie and it'll be a different point for everyone where you realise
what's
something.
Happening. Yeah.
And suddenly kind of your understanding of everything that's gone before twists a little bit, it kind of turns on its head and
oh, wow.
gives you a really real kind of like jump in the chest, like gasp moment.
Mm-hmm.
It's
really interesting hearing you talk about this because you're literally beaming. You're so excited about this film. But
you're
really trying to
reference.
Downplay it.
Yeah.
Really trying to downplay it because
yeah.
I feel like you're going to go and talk to other people about going and seeing this film.
Mm-hmm.
And now I want to go see it because I'm so intrigued. I have a question. Do you see the aliens?
Yes.
Good. Is there a resolution?
Yes.
Good. Okay. I'm
I
there.
I think Aish is on board.
I'm
actually convinced Aish to see a space.
And a really satisfying one. And I know that Ellie, who's not in the studio tonight, I know that she's seen it. And I'll be really interested to hear how she responded to it, because like me, Ellie is a movie blubber.
Mm-hmm. And you are not really that much a movie crier.
No, I haven't.
I mean, you
shed a
single tear very stoically.
that's equivalent of blubbing in the
yeah.
It's just shedding the one.
How many
tear.
Times did you cry, Matt?
Only the once,
oh, okay.
but like this was both eyes.
Oh my god!
Yeah,
oh, wow.
yeah,
both
eyes.
Eyes, people.
Like by the end, I felt wrung out like a flannel.
Oh
like.
My goodness! Oh, I'm so excited to see this film.
Yeah.
Did this come at a good time for you?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
Feeling wrung
yeah.
out like a flannel
like
after
that,
a movie is the best.
Yeah. Like that kind of that optimistic idea that that there is a way that we could all sort of put aside our differences and stop kind of the petty arguments that kind of destabilise so much of what we have in this world.
Mm-hmm.
It felt like the right time for
mm-hmm.
it. And I think that because I'm hearing a lot of similarly kind of euphoric responses to this movie, and I think it is a movie that was released at exactly the right time for that reason.
Yeah, I feel like everyone at the moment needs a little bit of a lift with
yeah.
current political climates and whatnot. But yeah, it sounds amazing. I'm amazed by your review.
I'm
yeah.
almost,
literally speechless
yeah.
after this review.
I'm worried to talk it up too much. Like it's been very talked up.
Yeah,
all the posters have got
yeah.
the quote on saying this is the best sci-fi movie in decades.
Yeah.
And it's like I would go so far as to sort of take not best in decades, but I would take the sci-fi off that and
yes.
I'd just say
mm.
it's not a great sci-fi movie. It is just a great movie.
Yeah.
yeah. It's an interesting time for release as well, in terms of not really being in the caliber of Academy films and stuff.
Yeah,
it doesn't feel like it probably might not make it because it's a bit out of
the Academy's attitude to science fiction is changing a little bit. Yeah. So they expanded the Best Picture nomination list just to get one of the Nolan Batman movies in. Gravity, the Alfonso Cuarón movie, was nominated.
Yeah.
I can't remember, was it nominated for Best Picture or was it just effects? But
they normally sneak in through the effects window.
It was
window,
in there somewhere.
Yeah.
So I wouldn't be surprised to see it with nods.
I wonder if that's why they've repositioned it slightly to be like, okay, yeah, in a lot of ways it's a sci-fi movie, but a friend of mine who's a professional translator saw it and he said, this is a movie about translation. This is a movie about my job and what I do and my craft, you know, as a translator, as a linguist.
Yeah, and it allows Amy Adams' character to be a linguistics nerd. She gets to have her nerdy moments of kind of explaining this to people who don't get it and being really authoritative. And
that's a great thing to put up on a pedestal because it's something that people don't think about very often.
Linguistics is an underrated skill.
People aren't, you know, how many people do you meet now who are doing linguistics degrees? Hardly anyone.
And increasingly,
and it's such a cool skill to have.
Yeah, in an increasingly globalised world where most people speak English as well, the value of understanding a foreign language is being, you know, is diminished, and that's, I think, an important like philosophical point to make, where they're saying, at least my takeaway from this, I haven't seen the film, is that, you know, just because everyone speaks your language who is in your immediate circle doesn't mean there's not going to come a time when you come across someone who you can't, you know, you can't communicate with, and that communication is going to become the most important. Like, it's the foundation of your relationship with that being will be your ability to communicate with them.
Yeah. And I think it does a really impressive job of allowing inviting the audience in to share the characters' absolute joy and euphoria at reaching those moments of understanding and sort of becoming the first person ever to understand this thing and becoming able to speak this new language.
Yeah.
And it's a really good sort of shines a light on, like, if that were ever to happen, we would need that as the first point of, like, you know, that, like, you know,
first step's got to be someone with linguistics expertise.
Like, you can't be just like, you know, could they nuke us? Like, do we have the nukes to take them on? Like, that's not the first conversation.
Do they even mean us harm, right?
Yeah,
like, that's the question.
Yeah, how do you find that out?
It's the bit that's always hand-waved in other movies. It's like, they know our language already because they listen to our radio broadcasts.
Yes,
or they have universal translator technology or something.
Yeah,
they have digital radio up there because I'm pretty sure they don't have the internet. Like, that's going to be increasingly hard.
There's a science fiction series by Orson Scott Card that starts with Ender's Game, which was turned into a movie, but it has a sequence of books that come after, and one of them deals very explicitly with communication in that way, and I wonder if they've taken some inspiration from that.
Well, I should say, actually, it's I've credited the director and the cast, but it's based on a short story
by
Ted Chiang, who is a really fantastic, prolific sci-fi author who's worth checking out.
I thought it might have come from a book, but I wasn't sure.
I'm
really excited about it because it seems to me like it's sci-fi back to what sci-fi ought to do really well, which is address something philosophical with science fiction. And that's how sci-fi always existed in books and in films in the 70s and the 80s, and I think lately it's become all about the action.
Yeah, and that's sort of where I come at it from. I'm like, sci-fi's
Yeah, it's really
me,
just an action
this...
movie in space, right?
Yeah.
Like, it's not addressing something philosophical.
Exactly. This sounds amazing.
Jupiter Ascending, this ain't.
Oh, thank goodness for that.
Thank God. Well, I'm definitely going to go and see Arrival because that was a brilliant review. Thank you so much, Matt. I feel like you might be doing Harry Potter next time.
Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them.
Oh, exciting. Yep. Cool.
I think that's why Arrival's been released when it has, is to sneak it out before Fantastic Beasts and Star Wars.
Before everyone loses their minds
because
of Harry Potter being back.
I am excited for that.
Okay, well, if you want to hear Matt do the new... What's it actually called? I can't remember. It's
called
very
Fantastic
long.
Beasts and Where to Find Them.
Yeah,
it's the name of the book.
Okay, good. Well, Matt will be doing that in 2 weeks' time. I've been looking over my shoulder throughout the review, and I've been trying to really concentrate on what Matt's been saying, but I keep looking over and just, like, envisaging the boys crafting feces.
Alex is crafting with the... Like, it's so delicate.
Yeah, I can't see them because I've got my back to them, which
I think
is probably
I know what Alex is
thing.
Making, like, and I'm excited to
I can't,
see it.
I can't see Strats because it's hidden behind his body, but I can see I can see Alex really going with the sculpting tools.
Yeah.
Like, I was imagining... Oh, yeah,
so
Strats
yeah,
as well.
Yeah, he's got the tools.
Because
one tool per person.
When we set this task, I was imagining them just going in with their hands and fingers. But
we're running a tight ship today.
This is precision. decision. I think I know what Alex's is going to be when it's finished, and I'm very excited.
That's
to see
that's
the
impressive. That
just from the profile,
he's 10 minutes in.
They're very messy.
I think so.
Yeah, it's looking great.
So Matt's worked it out as well.
We're going to catch up with the boys now, and then after we catch up with them, we're going to talk immersive theatre while they're chuckling in the background. Guys, do you want to come over and have a chat?
Yeah,
sure.
So, guys, you are sitting back with the team now. You've mm-hmm. moved away from your work in progresses. How is it going?
I think it's going well.
Yeah.
I'm surprised. I'm surprised at where mine's gone. I wasn't expecting that to happen.
Are you finding this an easy art?
It's... No, yes and no. I'm enjoying it. Like you said last week, very, very much enjoying it. But it's not easy, but I'm just kind of going with the flow.
I'm liking it more than the drawing, because drawing seemed more absolute. When you made a mark on the paper, there was very little you could do to change that. But with sculpture, it's really nice and fluid medium, because you can literally screw up in a ball and start again.
Mm.
Or you can just keep changing it until it looks right, and it's very easy to undo, which is very different to... There's something about actually being able to touch it and feel it, and
there's a tactile quality to it, which you don't necessarily get when you're working with tools, say paintbrushes or pencils.
Yeah. Plus, having it as a 3D medium on the 2D medium that you then have to try and make look 3D is much nicer as well.
Yeah. Do you feel like you're being transported back to school?
A little bit, yeah.
There's a bit of that, but I'm surprising how like. Taking it more seriously this week. I mean, I took it seriously last week.
Yeah.
But this
I'm
week,
still
I'm like,
is that the competitive side of you coming in, Strat?
Absolutely,
any
I think. Yes.
Yeah, good. That's what we like to hear.
Utterly ruthless.
So, to make this segment a part of the show, we're asking the boys to do a little bit of research before they come and do a recording and also, you know, consequently do their art. Alex is holding a little bit of paper that he's scribbled his research on today, which I feel like was maybe done in your lunch break.
It was done just before I left.
Oh, good.
I had about half an hour to sort of just do a quick bit of like brushing up on the stuff that I knew about sculpture.
Cool. So the grand scheme of like what is sculpture to you? What do you know about it as a medium?
Well, to give it an awfully GCSE dictionary definition, sculpture is the rendering of any matter into a 3D form. Which means it's an incredibly expansive medium, ranging from stuff like the Stonehenge Easter Island, or stone bodies, as they've recently discovered, because they dug down past the heads and there's actually little bodies underneath. So they actually go underground. You've got Stonehenge, which some would say would be architecture, but architecture can also form into sculpture, because you've moulded and you've used materials to make something 3D large scale.
Yeah, I feel like there's a Venn diagram there.
Yes,
of
absolutely.
Architecture and sculpture.
Absolutely. It also features in installations.
Yeah.
Because installations are things that you can walk into. So you could argue that a structure, a building, is sculpture that is also an installation. But that's an argument for or discussion for a completely different time. But you've seen differences in the way that it's been approached from the more classical period, like Michelangelo's David, Rodin's Kiss, which is all done from delicately crafting marble into things that are quite frankly absurd because they are so beautiful and exact, to the much more abstract, impressionistic
sculpture.
What's divisive about sculpture?
Well, I think some of the issues that I have with sculpture as an art form is the very abstract stuff, which is a lot of metal work or steel work, where people spend quite a lot of time creating something, and it just looks like a bit
junk.
Of steel.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, if you go to the Tate Modern, there's an awful lot of stuff that is very low lying, that is still sculpture, but it's quite it's like a small stone circle that will have bits of brick broken up into it, and that again, that's when you get into the much more abstract and impressionistic sort of forms of the art. Like the people I was thinking of was more like Picasso, Giacometti, who, although they're, you can tell that they're it's a physical person, it's not as realistic,
it's not
or
like
naturalistic.
Yeah.
Yeah, yes. It's a lot less lifelike. And then you get on to stuff like Anthony Gormley, who did the Angel of the North, and also all of those individual sort of like bronze sculptures looking out towards sea and stuff like that. Anish Kapoor, who did, I believe, the Orbit. Did he do the Orbit? Yeah, he did the Orbit, which is sculpture. It's a huge structure. That is a brilliant definition of sculpture and structure coming together. Mm. I'm trying to think what other stuff I looked at. Light sculpture, that's something that's come out more recently.
Is that similar to light painting, or is it...
Don't know, I'll be honest. I'm thinking in more terms of like the Lumiere. Stuff that happened on I think it was either this year or last year. It was winter time, it was London. We went around King's Cross and Central London there with these beautiful light sculptures that moved around and interacted. So it's an incredibly broad spectrum that you can really do an awful lot with, from just simply working with clay to working with clay and then casting it in bronze. And then also chipping away at stone. Like Henry Moore is another good example of doing much more sort of impressionistic abstract forms, but in a very variety of different mediums. He mostly worked in metal, I believe, or is it stone?
A little of both.
Yeah,
a little
bit of each. Yeah, I didn't know.
He did a lot of abstract human forms.
Yeah.
So they're recognizable.
Yeah. But they've also got back
holes.
If you
sort of
squint.
Lots of sharp angles
about it,
and kind of pointed.
Globular. It's very interesting to read up on, because you realise how much it pervades your day-to-day life without you really having any idea about it.
Art is everywhere.
Yeah, Trafalgar Square being a classic example, because there's a massive sculpture in the middle of it, a massive pole.
Yeah, it's quite extraordinary. I was just thinking about the difference between when you mould something out of clay, like you start with the raw material and you have to like build up out of that.
Yeah.
Or assemble something, versus you take a massive block of stone or marble or ice and you have to chip away to like release the thing that's inside it. It's like they're both sculpture, but they are two completely different approaches to how you would create.
And much less, you were saying how forgiving clay is.
Yes.
Not forgiving if you're chipping away at the stone.
Absolutely.
You chip the wrong bit away, you've got to start again with a new bit of stone.
Yeah. exactly what happened to the Sphinx.
Yeah. Nose gone. It's done.
Nightmare.
Yeah.
Does anyone have a favourite sculpture of all time?
I have seen David in the Flesh.
Oh, really?
It is extraordinary.
Mm. Yeah.
It is much bigger than you think it will be. Mm. Not in a rude way. But he is naked.
Where is it?
In Florence.
Okay.
You have to queue up to see it. We queued up for like an hour and a half, and I was like, this is such a waste of time. We had to queue up for an hour and a half to see a dude sculpted out of marble, and we got there, and we were just like, it's like jaw on the floor, and you're like, this dude is hot. And he is about 12 feet tall. It's very impressive, and it's just extraordinary that the thing that's amazing about David is that it was cut, he was sculpted from, and I refer to him as him because he feels like a real person, from a single block of marble, and that in sculpture world is really unusual for something of that size to be chipped from a single block. Like often I think they were you could kind of like piece them together from blocks, but I don't think that he did all of the work. He had like a bunch of apprentices do a bunch of the work, but it is extraordinary. It's an extraordinary piece of work.
Yeah. Matt, do you have a favourite sculpture off the top of your head?
Not off the top of my head. I do have a favourite sculpture fact, which is
we're full of these facts.
Like that a lot of the sort of the Greek and Roman sculptures that sort of immediately come to mind, the sort of the figures that you see on temples and things that people have relatively recently discovered that those would have been painted.
Yes.
Wouldn't have been. So when we see movies and they've got all these
white,
beautiful white marble sculptures, actually, if that was historically accurate, they would all be painted quite gaudy colours.
Oh, wow.
The best, because I had similar to that, but the bit that made me go, of course, is that when you see those sculptures, their eyes have no feature. I always thought, could they just not do eyes?
Yeah.
Because that seems like a
fair question.
A bit weird considering yeah. you can do they all can this other stuff. But of course, they painted in the colour and yeah. they painted in the pupils, so they look like
that's
these.
That's why they look weird.
That's why yes. they look weird, because oh. the detail would have been painted on afterwards.
Yeah.
That's so interesting.
Mm.
My favourite thing in, when it's marble sculpture is whenever they do fabric. You know, it'll be like a poke or something.
Yeah.
And I just look at it and I just think, like, if you go and see the Elgin marble, if you go and see the Elgin marbles at the British Museum, you just look at them and you just think, how did someone think to do this in the first place, let alone actually execute on it over
this,
1,000 years ago?
This
like,
looks
it's extraordinary.
Soft and looks light and it's
yes.
made of stone.
Yeah.
The cognitive dissonance
it's
is weird.
Just extraordinary. Yeah, that stuff is it blows my mind every time. And to do that without modern technology, they're not 3D printed. To do that, but just by releasing the sculpture from a block of marble, is extraordinary.
Remember the time before 3D printing, guys?
Can we get you guys to 3D print something as an art?
Well, you can buy 3D pens.
Yes, they're awesome.
The ink is like, I don't know exactly how it was, but you can draw up out
yes.
of the pen and actually draw something in 3D.
That's taking sculpture to a new level.
Yeah.
That's weird.
It's only a matter of time, I think, before we start to see sculptures that, you know, that really are like grown out of.
My favourite sculpture is Lobster Phone by Salvador Dali.
That's a great sculpture.
Seen it.
Yeah, it's great.
Anything by Dali.
Just because it's a lobster. And it's just like, so simple.
Yeah,
so
simple
effective.
And incredible.
Favourite? Quickly, before we let you guys go back to
your
sculpting.
I was thinking about this, actually.
You're consulting your research to
get
your favourite sculpture.
No, it was just the name of it. It's called Cold Dark Matter by Cornelia Parker. And it's what she did was she filled up a shed with loads and loads of stuff, got the MOD to blow it up, filmed that, and then reconstructed the exploding shed around a single light bulb in a room. So you go in and there's all these shadows cast around like bike wheels and bits of wood and all that sort of stuff.
Cool.
So it looked really impressive. And the story behind it was really cool because someone got to blow up the shed in the name of art. And I was like, that's the kind of art I'm interested in.
We will not be blowing anything up on this show.
No, unfortunately.
Sorry, guys. Strap, do you have a favourite, or do you?
I've never considered. Do I have a favourite sculpture?
You can come back to it at the end of the show if you want to have a think about it whilst you're working on your sculpture, if you'd like.
No, it's just I don't know if I could name that. But like, there's David, and then there's I do know Lobster Phone because
there's probably loads
Lobster
that you know of that you just that aren't in the forefront of your mind.
Yeah, I think this comes back to like lots about, but maybe not given as much consideration as many other art forms. So it's just not at the front of my.
And that's what we like to highlight on the Black Show Arts Hour is art that is just not thought about sometimes.
Yeah.
You know, making people really think.
You better believe I'm going to go and
you're
swan
gonna
up
go,
on some sculpture.
You're going to fall into a sculpture wormhole on the internet.
All YouTube videos of sculpture.
Yeah.
Well, okay, we're going to let you guys get back to what you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
Think about maybe what kind of era of sculpture, period of sculpture your sculptures might fit into.
Right,
that's my next question for you when we reveal your final sculptures at the end of the show. So off you go.
All right.
So Vix, at the top of the show, you went and we were sort of talking about you going and seeing something.
Yeah, seeing not the accurate phrase or verb for what it is that
I'm
me and
white.
Alex experienced on Friday. Me and Alex and a couple of friends of, mine from work, but Alex's friends too now, because we were bonded by the traumatic experience, went to an immersive theatre event, which I think is the best way of referring to it. A show doesn't feel right, and performance doesn't feel quite right either, although obviously a lot of it was performed. We went to an immersive theatre experience called Hunted by Colab Theatre, who are an immersive theatre company based in London. Their latest production is Hunted, and that's what we went to on Friday. For anyone that's maybe now thinking, Hunted, there's a TV show called Hunted, I'm aware of that. Mm. It was quite similar in many ways.
Were you hunted?
We were hunted.
Oh, God!
We were hunted. It was on many levels terrifying. they gave us a lot of instructions before we started, but actually no actual information about what was going to happen. There were things like health warnings and a safe word.
Mm-hmm.
Which I won't,
like
I won't tell
yet.
You because obviously it's important to like preserve the integrity of the show for anyone who might decide to do it. It was a very, very reasonable £19, and there are only 10 of you taking part in each version of the show. So props to them for their incredibly slim margins, because it was a really well-executed experience. I'm not going to go into lots of detail about what happened because it's still running, and I urge people who are grown-ups and who are, you know, probable thrill seekers and who don't mind high-octane situations to really sign up to go along and do it. You could go on your own.
Don't do that. You're
thrown in with a group of 9 other participants, so it doesn't actually matter how many people you're with because you are firm friends with them by the end. But when I was describing it in great detail to Ellie, because she was excited to know all of the little bits and pieces that happened, she said, it's like you lived an episode of Spooks. And I think that is a fair assessment. The BBC television show Spooks.
Ellie has been watching a lot of Spooks.
She has been watching a lot of Spooks, but actually it was a fair comparison to the experience that we had.
So was this in like a space, in a building, or did they let you loose on the streets and hunt you there?
Good question. So for the first 30 minutes, we started at Waterloo, and we were given a telephone number to send a text message to at exactly 7 p.m, which we did with our names, and they sent us back, this isn't spoil anything for anyone, they sent us back a link. Which we followed, and that had a voice clip on it. And the voice clip was giving us instructions directly through our phones into our ears, and it took us on a journey. Again, I don't want to go into too much detail to spoil it, but they do tell you in the instructions that you end up going on the tube. So we actually went to an entirely different location, and the first 30 minutes or so, I would say, was us outside in London, moving around entirely reliant on the instructions we were being given on this voice clip, which was really smart, because they didn't really have to be involved in the show until we were 30 minutes in.
Sure.
But what they did so effectively was they taught you like the grammar of the experience, so you understood the rules by the time you got to a point where things started to get quite intense.
Mm-hmm.
So you're quite safe to start with, because you are thinking, I could just get on the tube and go home. I could just get on the tube and go home. Like, I really, really could. And so you feel quite safe, but they're also just slowly starting to build this paranoia about the fact that you're being watched, that you're being followed, that you're trying to lose your tail. They separated we were a group of 5, and they separated all of us and made us go different ways, but we ended up re-meeting at the same location. And it wasn't until I was completely on my own going down a street near Waterloo that I started to think, am I being followed? Am I being followed?
Yeah, can I be killed tonight?
And there were all kinds of little bits and pieces and the kind of clues that we had to pick up. And once we got to a certain point, we were met by a person involved in the production who then took us to a safe house where things started to get pretty intense and a little claustrophobic.
But you're supposed to be safe in the safe house.
Well, exactly, but are you ever really?
Matt, we've seen enough films to know that safe house is
never
basically the negative of what the word means.
What was fantastic about it was they did some really clever stuff with very few performers. They had very few performers involved in that, but it worked beautifully. They used the structure of the inside that had been built in a really interesting way. I was trying to really pay attention to how that had been built, because I was like genuinely interested in the mechanics of the show, because I'm always interested in the mechanics of the show. But when things got very, very intense, I kind of forgot about that and was really just focused on my own survival for a while, which was pretty thrilling. What they did very cleverly also is they never made those moments of total stress last too long, because they're very aware, obviously, of the fact that if you hit a period of sustained adrenaline, you could be in deep trouble.
Yeah.
But I do strongly recommend it to anyone who's thinking of doing it. You just sign up and buy your tickets online. They give you the details, very extensive details about where you have to go.
Mm-hmm.
The instructions made me think it was going to be much scarier than it was.
Right.
I felt safe for the entirety of the show. Like, I was aware enough that I was in a performance experience.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I can imagine for some people, including some of the other participants who aren't really involved in theatre a lot, it feels much more real.
Mm.
So I do urge you that if you think you would be terrified in that situation, to probably give it a miss.
Maybe not for you.
But it was extraordinary. It was extraordinarily well done. Colab Theatre are doing great stuff. It's like their 6th or 7th immersive show that they've done. It was really, really smart. They're running 8 shows per night. I don't even understand how they are making that happen. That's like, amazing. It's quite something. They must be running shows in parallel.
That's a logistical nightmare.
Yeah. Me and Alex were trying to work out the logistics of it. Like, one of the things I was most interested in was, like, how are they executing this?
Yeah.
Like, what are the tricks? What are the things that they're doing execute a show to this level of detail? Because you need the detail for it to feel real.
Yeah.
If the detail's not there, you're out, you know, you're out of the performance entirely.
And that's nice coming out of a show that was good and being like, how are you guys doing this? Yeah, amazing. It was extraordinary. So well,
it was absolutely extraordinary. Yeah. So if you're in for a new experience, I mean, immersive theatre isn't new. There are plenty of immersive theatre experiences out there. As I was explaining to one of my colleagues who was experiencing immersive theatre for the first time, it's on very much a sliding scale from promenade theatre that kind of tips into immersive once you start to be involved as an audience member, to fully immersive where all of the action revolves around you, which is where we were on Friday night.
And even that audio guided type of theatre where you're being fed sort of recorded instructions, even sort of companies we know like Non-Zero One have done shows like that.
Exactly, yeah.
I have a couple of questions.
Go ahead.
Would you recommend this for people who enjoy things like sort of escape rooms and those kind of like runaway from the zombies type like experiences?
That. Yes, 100%. Exactly that. My colleague who I went with loves those escape room activities, and for him, his only critique of it was that he wanted more discovery. Like, he wanted more discovery elements, more things where we were having to find stuff, solve clues and things like that. But at every single stage, there were, like, activities and things that we had to do that controlled the action. There were choices we had to make as a group.
Mm-hmm.
There were times where we had to rely on one person in the group to do something in the right way. So there was quite a lot of that, which was interesting with a group where you didn't know everybody as well.
Yeah.
So that was, like, an interesting dynamic too.
Wow. I'd be the worst at that situation because if someone like got it wrong, I'd be like, "What are you doing?"
Yeah,
so there was no patience for people that are not good.
Yeah, so I think you would have hated it on many, many levels. But there was a point where
I agree with that.
There was a point where I was under threat, and Alex got lippy with the person that was threatening me. in a way that I was fully expecting him to do. Like, as soon as this guy was up in my grill, I was like, 3, 2, 1. Oh, there's Alex. Enter stage left. There's Alex giving this guy all the lip. And later, a woman said to me, she said, "Oh, is that your other half?" And I was like, no, he's a friend of mine. I said, if his wife was here, she would not be enjoying this. There was a bit where we had to, and I don't think this ruins anything, crawl through basically like an air duct type thing, like you see in the movies, that was like super dusty and gross. And I was just like, I should hate this so much, like deeply hate this.
Imagine if I went to that after work wearing my outfit, like my work outfit, I'd be like,
again, they do
it.
Warn you, they Thank do you. Warn you, like they're like, no bags, nothing, that's like, they were like, you will be crawling through tight spaces,
God, I have
you
so
will
many
be
accessories
fixed.
I couldn't do it.
You couldn't do it. They were like, wear clothes that you don't mind getting mucky, like,
don't
so
have
you
them.
Have to
don't
yeah.
exist.
You would not have enjoyed it, so it's a good job we went and not you.
Okay, cool. That was amazing. That was a great Arts Thing of the Week. There are so many noises coming from the background. It's so distracting. If it's not Strat moving around to get on the floor so he can have a closer look of his sculpture, then it's bowl noises of them dipping into water. Right now, we're going to play you a really quick little excerpt from one of our scare slams that happened last year. Boys, I'm giving you a bit of a warning in the sense that you have to show your work soon. So just after this, we're going to come back and talk to the boys about what they're sculpting.
Should we do a Sue Perkins on the Bake Off? Like, bakers,
you have
5 minutes left on your bakes.
5 minutes left on your sculpts, guys. This is a little story from the Scare Slam.
Hello, my name is Harriet, and I'm telling you about some events that occurred in my old apartment. This was last December when I was living in Hounslow. It was as cheap as Greater London allows for people on minimum wage, and it wasn't covered from head to toe in mould, so I was happy. And I had Julian, my boyfriend. He and I had been going out for a few months, and we were definitely an active physical stage in our relationship. He'd taken me out for some celebrated cocktails because of, you know, obviously the new housing situation, and I decided to bring him back for some brand spanking new flat action, where I guess the plan was to consummate the drinks, so to speak. So right as we were, you know, there was a very loud noise that came from next door. Now, there are only a few rhythms or volumes or noises that can make you stop having sex, and I guarantee you this was one of them. It sounded like there was a tornado trying to get through the wall. No knocking, no pleading for quiet. It's not a neighbour. It was like a giant washing machine was pressed up against the wall. So we stopped, startled as you would be, and it carried on for a few more seconds, and then nothing. We tried again that night, and then the same thing happened. I can't do it, but it was loud. After that, we kept going to his place, and occasionally we'd come back to mine if enough time had passed or we'd forgotten about the noise. Thinking about it now, the worst thing wasn't that it was fading in and out. It was either on or off, if that makes sense. But this wasn't just a noise. This was a force. And we knocked once or twice, hoping to, I don't know, sort out this grievance or apologise, but nobody answered. Once, I rang the landlord, and he said, "Floor's empty, there's no one in there." And I said, "There is someone doing something very loud in there, and I don't know what it is, and it's freaking me out." And he said, "It was probably seven doing some drilling," which is the apartment above four, which I kind of just accepted because I thought that made sense. It's easier to believe that we were victims of some unfortunate timing than to think that someone was actually taking offence to what we were doing. Julian hated the noise, and I mean hated. He said it put him on edge. And the problem was he would forget, and he would try and instigate. So either I would remind him we were at mine, or the noise would start. I found myself staring at the wall at night, only when I was alone. I was afraid of the noise, but just once I wanted to hear it another time. It was horrible to listen to, but if it had happened once or twice in the middle of the day or in the dead of night when I was there alone, I wouldn't have minded. At least I'd have known it was a coincidence, but it never did. That made it worse. And my birthday came round. We went away for the weekend, Paris. He's choosy like that. We had so much fun, and we forgot all about it. And so when we went back and we dragged all of our luggage up to my place, we weren't even, you know, we were far too tired, but he just kissed me, and it started. And we both realized how much control this noise had over us, and I felt so helpless, and Julian was going absolutely ballistic. "I'm not taking this shit anymore." And he stormed out, slamming every door his way, and he started punching number four's door. "Come out, come the fuck out, you creep." And he started kicking it, and I phoned the landlord. I told him it was definitely coming from next door, and Julian was about to break the door down. He told me he was coming round, and we'll look together. So I tried my best to calm Julian, but I was pretty angry myself. And when the landlord finally arrived, we opened the door, and this cold, empty breeze hit us on the way in. And we all knew that second that the place was empty, but we went in. And room by room, we looked at the bare carpets, the empty bedrooms. And when you turned the lights on, you could see the dust falling through the air. And then we got to the room that was through the wall. And there was a table in the center with an open Bible. And in big black pen, there was a circle around the sentence that said, "For God will judge the sexually immoral and adulterous." And the wall had a circle, like it had been sanded down through the paint, through the brick, and it went so deep towards the center. It was like it had been mapped out by a protractor. I mean, it was perfect. It was a perfect circle. Julian walked up with his hand outstretched and vaguely touched the middle, and there was a loud bang as he touched it, and some plaster collapsed onto my bed. It was so close to my room that the wall had collapsed through. And Julian started saying, you know, he wanted to know who had the keys, who'd lived there before, but I just wanted to leave. I handed in the month's notice, and I spent the rest of the time at Julian's. I only went back during the day, never alone, just to pick up my stuff. I had to cover the hole because, well, you know. Anyway, I live quite a way away from there now. And I never tried to find out what it was. I don't want to know. But I can remember everything about the room. I remember the Bible, the page, the sentence, the shade of the marker, the smell, the dust, the circle. And worst of all, I will never forget the noise. And no matter where I sleep, I still sometimes stare at the wall.
That was a scarce line piece that you just heard. We have the boys over here now. They've finished doing their sculpting for the evening. Mm-hmm. And we're pretty excited about what's going on. What is going on here, guys?
I went first last time, so I think you should.
Okay, I'll go first this time.
Just take your turns.
This is what I need.
Wow.
Okay, I don't know what that is.
It's great.
That is impressive stuff.
It's topical on mainly one level.
Just okay. The one.
Just the one level. It's, all the political shenanigans going on, whichever side you fall on,
is
I fall on.
Is it a turkey?
It's a turkey that's...
Is it a devil turkey?
No,
it's a Donald Trump turkey.
It's a turkey that's kind of moulded itself into a skull.
Okay.
Like it's like a Baphomet type
right.
skull.
Yeah. Yeah. I feel like it looks kind of Donald Trumpy as well.
And this is its butt.
it would be the turkey butt.
But it's actually now its scary mouth.
The nose as well. It's the nose cavity of the skull.
Yeah.
It's very...
I call it giving thanks.
Nice.
Oh, very topical. I like it. It's, quite scary looking and a little bit like death metal.
It has got a death metal vibe about it.
It could feature like on a death metal album cover.
If you look at it from the side, it really looks like Donald Trump.
I like an art that can be interpreted multiple ways.
It's so good. It's good. It's strong, Alex. Well done.
It's very impressive. Strap, what have you created?
So this, you kind of have to look at it.
Oh, I love it.
A sort of this angle.
Oh, wow.
So what I've done...
It's so detailed.
Thank you. So again, it's America.
Look at the sad faces.
He's my guest.
Okay.
So you might get over here,
guys. Come and have a look.
So again, topical. So what I've done is I've taken Trump's hair and eyes...
The most important parts of his
and
face.
Kind of made it into like a slug. So like you have the lines on the back of the slug, that's its hair, and how his hair goes really weird at the back, that's kind of the tail of the slug going down.
Mm.
And its eyes in the front of it is kind of latching on and starting to consume the American flag, who the stars are on the top corner of which I have replaced by little sad faces.
It's amazing.
But just in its path is a load of slug pellets. Because I think America's going to beat Donald Trump. So while it kind of represents the sadness that he's here, but there's an optimism there
that
the American flag will destroy him.
And also slug pellets might kill him.
Yeah.
Someone should try that.
Please don't assassinate...
Just call me David Attenborough.
Just advocating a slug pellet based approach.
Yeah. I didn't think to name it.
Name is incredibly lame.
Yeah, but I don't know if any of you want to suggest something.
No, I can't.
Trump slug.
I mean, that's
Trump slug.
It's pretty on the nose.
Trump
but
slug. Why not?
Trump slug. Yeah.
I think maybe we could hold a competition on Twitter to see who could come up with the best name.
Yeah.
That could definitely be a thing.
That'd be fine.
We will be tweeting photos of these sculptures that have been created here tonight. They are fantastic. Do we want to call a winner?
Yeah, which one are we putting on the plinth?
Are we voting?
Yeah, what sort of goes on the plinth?
Should we all do a vote? All three of us? So
is this a popular vote or an electoral college vote?
Oh, God.
Just a popular vote.
This is a democracy.
They're all democracies.
I just like to say that Alex is very lax with his emails.
Do you have a server in your basement? Because that...
I had a server once in my basement and they were terrible. The food never... That's all I'll say.
Guys,
let's move away from the Black Shore politics. Yes, it's true. Yeah, well, that's a different show.
I'm voting for Strat.
Me too. I like the simplicity of Alex's, but I
I feel Strats. Like the majority's already ruled, but I think I would probably go for Strats as well.
A landslide! Trump wins again!
Oh no! Trump slug.
That is a chant that should be happening on the streets of Brooklyn right now, if there is ever a chant.
Yeah, maybe we'll let this set and I'll send it to someone in America. Send it to Hillary.
I think John Oliver would like it.
Yeah, John make it onto Larger tonight.
Maybe we should have to make a hay.
I think the internet would appreciate Trump's love. And with that,
it could be the new Black Shore Arts Hour mascot. Trump's slug.
I mean, the dying Trump's slug. Very important note, I think.
Thank you so much, guys, for coming and doing another art. That was very, very entertaining once again. Thank you also to my hosts, Vicky and Matt, who are in the studio with me tonight. Thanks, Trump's slug. We'll be with you in 2 weeks' time. Bye.
Bye. Bye.